Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael with the Recording Library with a scheduling announcement. Since we began reading the newspapers over 10 years ago, many changes have occurred with the print industry. We have seen a steady decline in local articles from both local newspapers. Several weeks ago, the Midland Reporter-Telegram has stopped printing a Sunday and Monday edition. With all of these changes, as well as having fewer volunteers due to the pandemic, it's becoming difficult to sustain a two-hour daily newspaper broadcast. Therefore, beginning today, each day's newspaper broadcast will go from 2 hours to 1.5 hours. Be assured that all the currently read local articles and opinion columns will continue to be read. The national features, such as To Your Good Health by Dr. Roach, Dear Abby, and the horoscopes, will continue to be read as well. We will also still be airing the Business and Oil program, the Lifestyle program, and the Religion program with those local newspaper articles at their regular times. The half hour after the newspaper will now feature our coronavirus update, which is moving from the 1 p.m. hour. The coronavirus update will now be able to be repeated two times, at 1:30 a.m. and 8:30 a.m. following the local newspapers. So you'll have three chances now to hear the coronavirus update. Thank you for understanding as we continue to do our best to bring you daily newspaper printed articles from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the weekend edition of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Section A. County leaders discuss raising sales tax rate. Potential vote to call sales tax election could happen in March, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Midland County Commissioners on Friday discussed raising sales tax in the county from 7% to 8.25% to match the sales tax rate within city limits. Any rate increase would need to be passed by voters after it's approved by the Commissioners' Court. County Judge Terry Johnson said the extra sales tax would be used to mitigate revenue lost because of the coronavirus pandemic and finance future projects. To do the things we need to do, it's going to take money. We can either do it with property taxes or we can do it with sales taxes. Raising money and raising sales tax in the county would allow commissioners to maintain the current property tax rate, which is the lowest in the state, Johnson said. City residents would not be affected by a tax increase in the county. Only county residents would be eligible to vote in the sales tax election, which Johnson said would take place during the November general election if approved by commissioners. He said there are about 8,000 registered voters in the county. The voters of Midland County will be the ones to determine if a rate increase happens. We don't get to just vote it in or vote it out, but we hope to make the case that we'll be able to maintain low property taxes like the county has done for a long time, plus we'll be able to do bigger and better things. Some projects the county hopes the added revenue would go toward are construction of a new jail and road infrastructure improvements. He said the county jail will need to be replaced within the next 5 years, and the commissioner's court intends to continue to address the road budget. The court allotted about $24 million for roads this year, according to the 2021 adopted budget. Johnson said that based on calculations for 2019, the county could bring in an extra $80 million annually if the rate is increased 1.25%. He said oil companies and service companies would be contributing more than county residents. Oil companies will be paying for the majority of it. Right now, when you do work for an oil company out in the county, they can charge 7% tax. When we do work for them in the future, if it passes, there will be an 8.25% tax, and that's how it will be funded for the most part. Raising sales tax to 8.25% in the county would bring the rate up to what was set inside city limits, which includes a half cent dedicated to county government. The maximum rate that can be set by local taxing jurisdictions is 8.25%. 6.25% of the rate is state sales tax. Commissioners opted Friday to table voting on the proposed rate increase until the next commission report meeting on March the 8th. Breaking Bread Ministries staff continue to serve after the winter storm. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. After the winter storm last week, Breaking Bread staff and volunteers are working to find where clients have found shelter or moved. Foundation's Director Trey Atwater said a lot of clients have found temporary housing either at the Salvation Army shelter or by getting together in groups and buying hotel rooms, which is common during winter months. Most of our clients have been on the street for extended periods, he said. There are people considered sheltered homeless and those that live in low-income housing that aren't considered homeless, but they are underserved, and we work with them to bring them to the kitchen to be served, as well as doing wellness checks. Mobile Outreach Manager Tim Klein, who was previously homeless, has been working at Breaking Bread for the last 5 months. He has helped make new relationships and has found more encampments where people have been staying. Klein said that during the winter storm, a lot of the homeless received temporary shelter indoors thanks to many people in the community. They are our family, Klein said. It was kind of nice to go out and not find anyone because they had all found shelter. We were driving around looking, but people in the community had already started to help them find temporary housing. During the winter storm, the West Texas Food Bank donated 200 boxes of food, and Breaking Bread, in turn, donated food to the Salvation Army in Midland, which was having problems receiving food shipments. Klein, Atwater, and volunteer Tammy Argo served 37 people breakfast through mobile distribution on Friday throughout Midland. Klein said that the amount of meals distributed usually depends on the type of weather, because on cold days people tend to hunker down, but on nice days they get up and are moving. We work to get people housing, but it's really more looking for respectful shelter, while housing is more long-term sustainable answer for clients. People's morale is up and down constantly if they're living on the streets. A commentary by Mary Sykes, Executive Director of Breaking Bread Ministries. During the historically cold weather, a plan to protect the needy was executed. During the terrible winter storm last week, Breaking Bread Ministries received many calls, emails, and social media messages from community members who were worried about people they saw out on the street. We care deeply about each person we serve out there and know every one of them by name, so it was amazing and humbling experience to hear so many other Midlanders expressing concern for our friends. While the severity of the storm caught many by surprise, this was exactly the situation for which we had been preparing. After the first freeze in October, Breaking Bread's street ministry team recognized that we needed an intentional and detailed emergency weather plan for our friends out there. Many of them did not even have the most basic survival gear, including winter wear and sleeping bags. We reached out to Midland for help and started a winter gear fundraiser on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Our generous supporters provided more than 100 sleeping bags and many coats, gloves, hats, and boots for those we serve on our outreach truck every morning. In preparation for the next storm, Breaking Bread's leadership met with several other nonprofits to formulate a more streamlined and efficient plan to get people out of dangerous winter weather and into shelter. When this storm forecast was announced, we readied ourselves and prepared to put the plan to the test. The Salvation Army of Midland worked very closely with Breaking Bread as we went out multiple times each day to pick up and bring every person we could find to their shelter. As the threat of the storm grew worse and people began to see it was not something they could ride out inside a tent or tucked away in an alley, every person finally agreed to go with us. The Salvation Army welcomed them each time our van pulled up, did not charge anyone or turn anyone away, and they even brought in extra beds and opened additional rooms to make sure every single one of the 200-plus people who came to the building had a safe place to stay. As they were housing and feeding so many people, their food supply quickly ran low. We reached out to the West Texas Food Bank, and within an hour, they provided 200 boxes to hand over to the Salvation Army. Just a few streets over, the Baptist Crisis Center stayed on call 24/7, ready to hand out winter clothes. We stayed in communication daily and were prepared to open up our own building in case they became too full, as had been the plan in emergencies prior. Now that the storm has passed, we can all breathe a little easier. Our staff has looked back at that time and with amazement and appreciation for the nonprofits that jumped in, supported one another's efforts, and worked overtime to ensure that our fellow Midlanders were safe. None of us could have done it all, but our preparation and partnerships enabled us to keep many people sheltered and fed during the worst storm in our city that our city has seen in decades. Breaking Bread Ministries is proud to be a part of this group, humbled by the generosity of our community, and blessed to get to serve so many amazing and wonderful people. County Briefs from Staff Reports. Midland County urging residents to report winter storm damage. City government is asking any resident who sustained damage or loss due to the recent storm to self-report that damage to the Texas Division of Emergency Management. Reporting the damage is simple and only takes a few minutes. Even if you do not intend on seeking federal assistance for your damage, your report will help Midland County become eligible for federal individual assistance. The reporting tool can be found by going to tdem.texas.gov/warm. Individual assistance can be used to help fund temporary housing, repair or replacement of owner-occupied homes, and other repairs or replacements. Small businesses are eligible for federal loans through the Small Business Administration. Again, these programs will not become available unless Midland County can show significant damage due to the storm. For further information of individual assistance, please go to FEMA.gov/assistance/individual. If you would like more information about this topic, please call Justin Bunch at 688-4160 or email jbunch@mcounty.com. County leaders continue burn ban. The wintry weather didn't do much to help the dry conditions inside Midland County. In fact, county commissioners decided Friday to enact a burn ban for 30 days until March 28th. Justin Bunch, emergency management coordinator for the county, reported Friday that this burn ban will have a few changes, including some that will allow for residents to burn household trash. They include burning must be conducted between sunrise and 9 a.m. on the same day. It is illegal to burn at night in Texas. Sustained winds must be below 15 miles per hour. It must be household trash only. Must be contained in a barrel or other container. Cannot be in an open pit. Must be observed by a responsible adult during the entire burning process. Must have a sufficient water source within reach of the person responsible for the burning. Weather and sunrise information for the purpose of this order will be determined by the National Weather Service and can be found at weather.gov, according to the county. The National Weather Service reported Friday that 1/2 inch of rain of precipitation has fallen at Midland International Airport, 0.7 inch below what is normal through February 26th. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows the region, including Midland County, in exceptional drought conditions. Also, the Climate Prediction Center is calling for a 50% chance of less than average rainfall during the month of March. As always, if you start a fire, you're responsible for that fire, according to the county in the release. If the fire gets out of control and causes damage to another's property, you can be found criminally and civilly liable. Make sure you follow these conditions and ensure that you are as safe as possible. Always contact the Midland Fire Department at 685-7340 before burning and inform them of your intention to burn. If there are questions regarding burning in Midland County, please contact the Midland County Fire Marshal's office at 688-4160. If a resident would like more information about this topic, please call Bunch at 688-4160 or email jbunch@mcounty.com. Energy Briefs from Wire Reports. Midland. Diamondback reports fourth quarter loss. Diamondback Energy on the Monday reported a loss of $739 million in its fourth quarter. On a per-share basis, the Midland-based company said it had a loss of $4.68. Earnings, adjusted for non-recurring costs, came to 82 cents per share. The results surpassed Wall Street expectations. The average estimate of 13 analysts surveyed by Sachs Investment Research was for earnings of 80 cents per share. The energy exploration and production company posted revenue of $769 million in the period, which missed street forecasts. 10 analysts surveyed by Zacks expected $769.8 million. For the year, the company reported a loss of $4.52 million, or $28.59 per share, swinging to a loss in the period. Revenue was reported at $2.81 billion. Diamondback shares have climbed 41% since the beginning of the year. In the final minutes of trading on Monday, shares hit $68.40, a drop of 13% in the last 12 months. Irving, Pioneer Natural Resources, shows $43 million in earnings. Pioneer Natural Resources on Tuesday reported fourth quarter earnings of $43 million. On a per-share basis, the Irving Texas-based company said it had net income of 26 cents. Earnings, adjusted for non-recurring costs, were $1.07 per share. The results beat Wall Street expectations. The average estimate of 10 analysts surveyed by Zacks Investment was for earnings of 66 cents per share. The independent oil and gas company posted revenue of $1.86 billion in the period, also beating street forecasts. Four analysts surveyed by Zacks expected $1.8 billion. For the year, the company reported a loss of $200 million, or $1.21 per share, swinging to a loss in the period. Revenue was reported at $6.69 billion. Pioneer Natural Resources shares have risen 28% since the beginning of the year, while the Standard & Poor's 500 index has risen slightly more than 3%. In the final minutes of trading on Tuesday, shares hit 145.24, a rise of almost 7% in the last 12 months. Midland's 12-cent gas price increase, one of the lowest in Texas, by Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstMP.com. The average price of gasoline increased by more than 10 cents in all but one of the largest 27 metropolitan areas in the state this week, according to AAA Texas. The organization reported the average price in Midland climbed 12 cents and was tied for the second lowest increase in the state and was 4 cents less than the 16-cent average increase across the state. Midland's average increased to $2.54 a gallon, which was the third highest in the state, trailing only Odessa and El Paso. The average across the state was $2.40. The average in Odessa rose 17 cents. The average in El Paso increased by 9. Six metropolitan areas showed increases of 20 cents or more. Refineries are recovering from last week's wicked weather, AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster stated. Still, with demand reportedly down and fuel supplies healthy, gasoline prices are likely to rise for several days to come in the wake of the storm's impact to production. Across the region, Amarillo reported the lowest average. The price there increased 15 cents. The average in Lubbock moved 18. Drivers there were paying $2.38 a gallon. The largest week-over-week increase in the state was reported in San Angelo. The average in the Concho City is now above the state average at 241. The lowest average in the state was found in San Antonio, 233. Midland drivers are now paying 19 cents more for gas than they did 1 year ago. Since January 1, the average price of Midland is up 47 cents. The state average has increased 46 cents. Oil. CEO, oil priced for protection after bullish run. By Milla McEwen. MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Oil prices surged almost 22% in February, according to Bloomberg. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange climbed above the $63 level Wednesday, rising $1.55 to $63.22 per barrel. But prices lost momentum and sank $2.03 to 3.2% to close the week at $61.50 per barrel. The posted price, according to Plains All American, was $57.98 Friday. Natural gas prices on the New York MEX dropped all five trading days this week, beginning with an 11-cent drop Monday. Prices fell an additional half-cent Friday to end the week at $2.77 per MCF. Lance Robertson, chief executive officer of Endeavor Resources, told his audience at the Midland Chamber of Commerce annual State of the Oil and Gas Luncheon Wednesday that the oil and gas industry's recovery from last year's pandemic and oil market crash has been stronger than anticipated. He did caution that growth would be slower than in the past. I agree with Lance that oil is priced for perfection at $61.51 at this moment, taking a breather today by trading down over $2 per barrel after a bullish run, having started 2021 at $48.52 per barrel. Steve Pruitt told the Reporter Telegram by email, "What I mean is the $60 plus oil price assumes effective global vaccine dissemination and effective vaccines, petroleum product demand recovery to over 100 million barrels a day, and continued OPEC plus discipline. The economic and commodity price recovery continues to feel fragile, as does the robust stock market that has shown signs of weakness in the last few trading days." He added that the March 4th OPEC meeting is very important for oil prices to remain above the $60 per barrel. Let's not ignore the importance of the recovery in natural gas and natural gas liquid prices. As many of us produce half of our product in this form. While most Permian gas producers realize negative residue gas prices after processing and transportation fees in 2020, Waha Hub natural gas prices are now at $2.50 per MMBTU, and NGL prices after processing, transportation, and fractionation fees are north of $18 per barrel. This is a big improvement over 2020, when NGL prices averaged around $10 to $11 per barrel net to the producer. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Association, told the Reporter Telegram, "The last year has been extremely tough on everyone in the industry, but the Permian Basin has been hit especially hard. The Permian Basin service sector has been pummeled by the slowdown in activity. The increasing oil and natural gas pricing in recent weeks is a very welcome sign and bodes well for the rest of the year. It appears that delivery of COVID-19 vaccinations has been a positive impact on consumer optimism, which in turn is increasing economic activity. We are seeing rig counts tick up and more completions in the field. Additionally, Biden administration executive orders pausing activity on federal lands is creating major problems for operators, which, if kept in place, will reduce supply from New Mexico and elsewhere. These supply reductions will also be supportive of positive price movement." Bloomberg attributed Friday's drop in oil prices to a rising dollar, reducing the appeal of commodity prices in the currency as well as concerns surrounding inflation. Yet, Bloomberg reported, the U.S. crude benchmark still managed to post a nearly 18% gain this month as inventories worldwide tightened and pockets of demand returned. Domestic crude production dropped in 2020 for the first time in 4 years, according to the U.S. government. Prices have been a little more risk to the downside from a recent run that we've seen. Tariq Zahir, managing member of the Global Macro Program at Thai Capital Advisors, told Bloomberg, to continue going higher from here, demand has to come back pretty substantially. According to Bloomberg, crude prices have notched the largest year-to-date gain than in any year prior to the same time period, in part due to OPEC Plus production curbs helping to deplete global stockpiles. Plus, the unprecedented cold blast that recently halted millions of barrels of U.S. output means oil markets are about 100,000 barrels a day tighter than previously thought. According to J.P. Morgan Chase, supply scarcity may worsen in the coming months as North Sea fields undergo major maintenance. U.S. rig count tops 400 for the first time since summer, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Drilling activity continues to recover from the record lows seen last summer and the pandemic oil and market crash. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes and data analytics firm Enverus reported the U.S. rig count rose 400 for the first time since last summer, adding 5 rigs to 402 for the week. While that is well above the record low 244 reached last August, it is 388 rigs below the 790 at work a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for oil rose 4 to 309, less than half than the 678 drilling for oil last February. There were 92 rigs drilling for natural gas, up 1 this week and down 18 from 110 last year. Texas added 23 rigs to 197, but is 203 rigs below the 400 at work statewide at this time last year. New Mexico added 1 rig for 62, and Pennsylvania joined the two as a producing state with a higher rig count, up 1 rig. West Virginia was the only producing state with a decline, down 1. The Permian Basin remains above the 200-rig threshold, adding 4 rigs for 208 at work in the region, a decline of 203 rigs. Lee County, New Mexico, continued to be the most active county in the Permian with 33 rigs, up 1 for the week. Martin County held steady at 22 rigs, while Midland County added one for 21 at work within the county lines. Howard County reported 18 rigs, unchanged for the week, and Levin County had 16 rigs, unchanged for the week. Upton County and Reeves County jumped 3 rigs for 11 at work this week. Andrews County had the steepest decline, down 3. Enverus reports the U.S. rig count is up 4% in the last month, but still down 46% over the year. The most active operators in the U.S. are currently EOG Resources, Devon Energy, Pioneer Natural Resources, ConocoPhillips, and Occidental Petroleum. Since the start of 2021, more than 60 rigs have been added in the U.S. BP has had the largest increases since January 1, adding 5 rigs and bringing its total to 12. 4 of the BP rigs were added in the Eagle Ford. Mewbourne has added 4 rigs, 3 of which were in the Delaware Basin, and has a total of 11 running. Permian Pure Play Diamondback Energy has added 3 rigs since the start of the year and is now running 10. More than 100 companies have added 1 or 2 rigs apiece in the new year. Obituaries and death notices. Carl Robert Ramsey, beloved father and grandfather, died on February 9th. A celebration of life will be held Saturday, February 27th at 11 a.m. at the Porter Loring Mortuary in San Antonio. Arrangements are with Porter Loring Mortuary North, San Antonio. Phone number 210-495-8221. Rena Santana Lopez of Midland passed away on Sunday, February 21st. A graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, March 2nd, at the Loving Cemetery in Loving, New Mexico. Services will be live streamed for those who cannot attend. There will be no visitation, and facial coverings are required. Services have been entrusted to West Funeral Home in Carlsbad, New Mexico. Condolences may be expressed at westfuneralhomellc.com. Joe Cantano, 68, of Midland, passed away Saturday, January 23rd. Arrangements were made with Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home in Midland. Online condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at luellagarciapipkinfh.com. Patsy Ann Holly Martin passed away on February 6th in North Ranchland Hills, Texas. Visitation was held 6 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, February 23rd at the Lucas Funeral Home in Keller. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday, February 24th, with interment at Borland Cemetery in Keller. In lieu of flowers, please send memorial gifts to the Alzheimer's Association, donated to fight Alzheimer's disease. Walter Melvin George of Midland passed away on February 18th. A memorial service for the family will be held on March 11th at the Texas State Veterans Cemetery in Abilene. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests that donations be made in Walter's name to the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, the Salvation Army, or MD Anderson. Marcus Antonio Reese, 15, of Midland, passed away on Friday, February 19th. Visitation will be Monday, March 1st, from 1 to 7 p.m., and Tuesday, March the 2nd, at Abundant Life Ministries, 511 North Stonewall in Midland. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, March 3rd, at Abundant Life Ministries. Catalina Nieves Ferreiro died on February 22nd. 2 days of visitation will be held on Monday and Tuesday, March 1st and 2nd, from 9 to 5 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral services will be on Wednesday, March 3rd at 10 a.m. Frank Constant, 95, of Midland, passed away on February 25th. No service is planned at this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home in Midland. Victoria Lara passed away on February 25th. Visitation will be held Monday, March 1st from 9 to 9 with a rosary to recite at 7 p.m. at Avalis Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held Tuesday, March 2nd at 10 a.m. at the funeral home. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, February 27th, 2021. Section A. Bike Demand High During Pandemic by Michael Bauer. Since the pandemic started, the demand for bicycles has skyrocketed across the country, and the same can be said for local shop Peyton's Bikes. The store, which has locations in Midland and San Angelo, recently opened up a new shop right here in Odessa back in December. It's been really good, Peyton's Bike owner Jason Hayslip said. We've been looking to be in Odessa for a while. We've been serving the area for about 70 years now. It's definitely something that we want to keep doing. The new store is located on 3600 Billy Hext Road, Suite 102, just next to the Mountain Bike Park, which has been a big reason for the success in Peyton's Bikes. Mountain Bike Park, and in turn, they support us, providing a venue for mountain bikes, Hayslip said. For a long time, we went without mountain bike trails. Then, 12 to 13 years ago, we opened the Odessa Mountain Bike Park. It's about 86 acres, and we have 10 and a half miles of trails, which we continue to invest in and develop. The Mountain Bike Park is a strong enough venue to go out and train and be able to compete at a national level in several races. Hayslip has been the owner of Peyton's Bikes for over 3 years now. The history of Peyton's Bikes goes back to the 50s. Hayslip claims it is the oldest standing bicycle shop in Texas. Peyton's originally started out as a toy store in 1951 by the Peyton brothers, Bob and Dick, before being spun off into a full bike shop in 1956 called Peyton's Cycles and Hobbies in Midland. David Hamm bought the store from Bob Peyton, who recently passed away in December, in the 90s before Hayslip purchased the store in October 2017. We're primarily in Midland, but during the 70s and 80s, there were locations all over to Texas, Hayslip said. They then started to dwindle as toy stores started going away, and the bike shop here in Midland was the last remaining entity in the business. There was another Peyton's Bikes that used to exist in Odessa that was located on the corner of University and Grandview before closing in the early 80s. With not many other bike shops in the area, Hayslip says Peyton's Bikes has been in an interesting position in being able to provide the four major brands. We're the only bike shop in the U.S. that carries your top four major brands, which are Giant, Trek Specialized, and Cannondale, Hayslip said. We're in a unique position to do that. Most of those don't work well together, but that allows us to compare and give our customers the best value. In addition, Hayslip claims they're the only shop that knows how to work on older bikes. We do antique stuff like Schwinn and things like that, Hayslip said. We're the only ones that know how that stuff works. Because we're such an old bike shop, we have piles of old parts. If you have an old bike, I have antique stuff like stuff from as far back as the 50s still floating around in the store. One of the primary reasons for the store's success has been the ability to evolve over time, according to Hayslip. If you were to ask 15 years ago what the primary top riding in Midland, people would say road riding, Hayslip said. Now we sell maybe one road bike to every 15 mountain bikes. Mountain bike part is huge and a major source of business. BMX bikes have taken off and we're a big supporter of BMX and skate parks. All of our skate parks allow bikes. Bikes have been a huge component. Since the pandemic reached the U.S. last year, the bicycle industry has seen growth that's been unprecedented. With people trying to social distance and gyms closing last year, retail sales of bikes began to surge as Americans turned to cycling for exercise. According to Hayslip, the demand increased by 300% last year when the pandemic started. During that time, the demand just skyrocketed, he said. The demand on repairs skyrocketed. It wasn't just bikes that were taking off. It was also bicycle parts and repairs. We were really the only big bike shop around out here. John Bean, who manages the Peyton's Bike store in Odessa, says that during the pandemic, people have been tired of being locked up and are wanting to go outside and ride their bikes more. A lot more people are wanting to get out, and their kids are wanting to get out as well, Bean said. You see moms and dads and kids at the park riding. We're getting to where it's better for people to get around, but they're still riding and still coming in and getting bikes. Hayslip said their store in Midland last year was overwhelmed with repairs to the point where they didn't have the capacity to store bikes. We were having to accept repairs on certain days of the week, he said. We've never been at a point to turn customers away, but at that point, we had to finish these repairs so that we could take some more. And that went on from March until this past summer, until we were able to restore back to normal operating procedures. The new shop in Odessa has been a big relief for them, filling in a void in town that was left when bicycles, etc. closed last year. They were taking in some of the repair traffic, and when they closed, It put a huge demand on us. We had bikes where we couldn't get parts for. It was like a 6-month wait to get basic, easy stuff. But it was a 100% industry-wide increase, and the increase on the demand was 300%. Every element was oversold. While business has been decent since opening up in December, Bean and his staff of 2 mechanics at the Odessa location are prepared for another surge in sales as the temperatures gradually get warmer with spring and summer approaching. Historically, bike businesses are good starting around March and on through October and November, Bean said. But it's getting warmer, and it's a bonus with the mountain bike park right behind us. We're going to get more and more traffic. Hopefully, we'll have a few sales. With the weather getting nicer, it will make it better for us. Storm heroes are lauded. Volunteers joined big effort to counter danger to welfare and lives, by Bob Campbell. A life-threatening event like the blizzard of February 14th through 19th spurs some people into action to help others in every way they can, and the Ector County Commissioner's Court recognized some of those who responded. When the ferocious storm cloaked the Permian Basin with 6 inches of ice and snow, zero temperatures, and rapacious north winds, 3 people and a church particularly stood out, the commissioner said at their Tuesday meeting. They were District Judge Sarah Kate Billingsley, downtown property owner John Herridge, Pleasant Farms convenience store owner Jamie Tisdale, and St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. The court gave each of them a framed appreciatory resolution and verbally thanked a number of other people and groups who worked and probably saved lives during the crushing power blackout. Others were Curbside Bistro, Fat Jack's Bakery, the Herrera Law Firm, and Taqueria Reynosa in Odessa, the Ector County Angels and volunteer fire departments around the county, and Johnny's Barbecue in Midland, along with a small army of volunteers that virtually lived outside during the worst days and nights of the calamity. It takes people like these to have a service heart and offer to help without being asked, and these individuals did that, County Judge Debbie Hayes said. Sarah Kate had a lot of people helping her, and they fed more than 1,000. It cost a lot of money, and she put together teams to pick up meals and deliver them. Herridge opened the Copper Rose building to over 100 people, including National Guardsmen, 6 dogs, a cat, and a baby goat in a box. Tisdale, owner of Wilson's Corner Grocery at 16514 U.S. 385, gave away food and water and invited people with animals to use her outdoor faucets to water them. Priests opened St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church as Odessa's second warming shelter after plans were scuttled to use the natural gas-heated Ector County Coliseum because Atmos Energy asked customers to conserve energy. Billingsley said burst water pipes were a critical problem when the electricity was finally restored by TXU Energy and its delivery arm, Encore, and that lots of food spoiled in refrigerators. The whole thing was very circular, she said. It was tremendously sad with 30% of the town not having power and even more not having water. We weren't prepared for that kind of snow and those types of temperatures. With 80 volunteers working out of her home, Billingsley said, we had people cooking, driving, and sending money. One farm dropped off a whole pig, and we had breakfast for dinner. Everyone we came into contact with was so appreciative and grateful. Some were embarrassed, but they'd ask, hey, Judge, could you help us out? We had so many amazing volunteers and people who wanted to deliver food in Odessa and Midland, said Billingsley, whose avocation is catering. We had delivered 994 meals by Friday, February 19th, and on Saturday we had a meatball rolling party, rolled 1,000 meatballs, delivered 144 sandwiches, and dropped off meatballs, sauce, and cheese casseroles. Local News Roundup. Spring Concert. The UTPB Philharmonic Orchestra has scheduled a spring concert for 7:30 p.m. Thursday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Main Hall, 1310 FM 1788, Midland. Performing selections will be from the opera Carmen, Beethoven's First Symphony, and a world premiere by the Odessan composer Seth Bedford. Admission is free. Visit tinyurl.com/56CG6H3Q. Sinatra and Beyond. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale has scheduled Sinatra and Beyond, a tribute to Frank Sinatra, featuring Tony DeSarre, at 7:30 p.m. March 6th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $30 to $50 and $17 for students. For tickets, visit mosc.org or call 800-514-3849. Man charged with assaulting girlfriend. A 36-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly assaulted his girlfriend for the fourth time in 5 months. Scott Daniel Thomas Sprenthal was charged with continuous violence against the family, a third-degree felony. The most recent assault happened at around 11:15 a.m. February 13th at the America's Best Value Inn, 3023 East Highway 80, an OPD probable cause affidavit detailed. Officers reportedly made contact with the victim, identified as Asha Nichols, who had a swollen right eyelid and bleeding abrasions around her right eye. Nichols detailed that her boyfriend of 1 year, Sprenthal, became upset with her, and they began to argue. During the argument, Sprenthal pushed Nicole against a cleaning cart near the doorway before pinning her to the ground and punching her with a closed fist in the face. Investigation reportedly showed that Nicole had been a victim of 3 previous assaults conducted by Sprenthal in the past 6 months. The incidents included assault by contact, family violence, a Class C misdemeanor, September 16th, assault, bodily injury, family violence, a Class A misdemeanor, November 23rd, assault by contact, family violence, a Class C misdemeanor, January 8th. All cases are still under investigation. Sprenthal was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has 1 bond totaling $15,000 and was still in custody as of Friday morning, jail records show. Woman charged with kicking officer in genitals. A 29-year-old woman who was reportedly found intoxicated and naked in the passenger seat of a car was arrested, and she later assaulted a police officer by kicking him in the genitals. Leslie Gonzalez was charged with assault on a public servant, a third-degree felony, and public intoxication, Class C misdemeanor. The reported incident happened around 9:07 a.m., February 21st, at Dumplin's Restaurant, 401 West 42nd, an OPD probable cause affidavit detailed. Officers were reportedly dispatched to the location in reference to check welfare, as dispatch stated a red Ford Focus was reversing and a passenger wasn't responsive. When officers arrived, Gonzalez was in the passenger seat where she was intoxicated and naked, the affidavit stated. She had a strong odor of alcoholic beverage coming from her breath, slurred speech, and red, glassy, bloodshot eyes. Gonzalez reportedly had inconsistent stories on why she was in the parking lot and wasn't being cooperative with officers. The vehicle keys were in the ignition, and Gonzalez had no designated driver on the scene. She stated a stranger dropped her off at the restaurant parking lot. Gonzalez was placed in custody for public intoxication and had refused to identify herself to officers. She was transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center for booking. When she arrived at the jail, Gonzalez reportedly became combative with officers and kicked Corporal Felipe Cobos in his genitals with her right foot, which caused him severe pain. Gonzalez was charged and booked into the jail. She had two bonds totaling $10,212 and posted bail February 22nd, jail records show. Police looking for man in connection to Walmart theft. The Odessa Police Department is looking for a man who reportedly was involved in a theft at Walmart. The reported theft happened December 11th at the Walmart located on Loop 338, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that a man stole $162 worth of property and exited the store without making any attempt to pay. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/5xd6c5cv. Anyone with information is asked to contact Detective Y. Medrano at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-9000562. Police looking for three people involved in grocery store theft. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for three individuals in connection to a theft at HEB. The reported theft happened December 4th at the HEB on West University, an OPD press release stated. Investigation showed that three individuals took $362 worth of property and exited the store without making any attempt to pay. OPD has released photos of all three individuals that can be seen at tinyurl.com/3m5xxm29. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Detective Y. Medrano at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-9000546. Man charged with pretending TV remote was firearm. A 37-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly pretended to use a television remote as a firearm. Ernesto Carrillo was charged with terroristic threat with fear of causing imminent serious bodily injury, a Class B misdemeanor. The reported incident happened at 12:58 a.m. February 24th at the Motel 1 located on East Highway 80, an OPD department probable cause affidavit detailed. Officers reportedly made contact with several people outside the hotel room where Carrillo was said to be. Carrillo barricaded himself in the room, refusing to come out. He later complied with officers and was detained in handcuffs. A witness at the scene, identified as Asha Nichols, stated she saw Carrillo was causing a disturbance and walked out of his room holding a shiny object that appeared to be chrome and that she believed to be a pistol. Nichols continued to detail that Carrillo began yelling, "Everyone, get on the ground." The victim, identified as Jesse Chandler, reportedly told police that Carrillo came out of his room with a firearm and told him to get down or you are next. Chandler stated he believed the object to be a pistol due to the way Carrillo was holding it and pointing it in his direction. Officers reviewed the surveillance footage, and it showed Carrillo coming out from his room in a highly aggressive manner and begin to point a television remote at Chandler while yelling at him. Officers also saw Carrillo go in and out of the room several times, continuing to point the remote as if to simulate himself holding a firearm. Officers also reportedly saw Carrillo conceal the remote in his waistband as if to further make people believe he was in possession of a firearm. Carrillo was arrested charged and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond totaling $1,000 and was still in custody as of Friday afternoon, jail records show. Man charged with choking wife, waving AR-15 rifle. A 26-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly choked his wife and waved an AR-15 rifle in the air while stating, "I will kill you. You will never go anywhere." William Browning was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. He also is being held by the U.S. Marshals, jail records show. The reported assault happened at around 6:49 p.m. February 23rd at the Legato Ranch Apartments, an Odessa Police Department affidavit stated. The victim, identified as Sydney Davis, reportedly told police that she and her husband got into an argument. The argument turned physical when Browning placed his hand around her throat and squeezed, which impeded her breathing. Davis stated she was able to get away, at which time she grabbed her cell phone to call for help. While on the phone calling for help, Davis stated Browning grabbed his AR-15 rifle and began waving it in the air. Davis stated that while Browning was waving his AR-15 rifle in the air, he stated, "I will kill you. You will never go anywhere." Officers reportedly saw redness around Davis' throat and a small cut, which is consistent with her statement. Browning invoked his Miranda rights and refused to answer questions. He was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond totaling $40,000 and was still in custody as of Friday afternoon, jail records show. Obituaries for Saturday, February 27th. Josephine Jimenez. Josephine Josie Jimenez of Odessa passed away Wednesday, February 17th at the age of 51 at Medical Center Hospital. She was born July 27th, 1969 in Odessa to Jose Antonio Sr. and Melba Munoz. Preceding her in death are her paternal and maternal grandparents and aunts and uncles. Surviving her are her husband, Anthony Jimenez of Odessa, daughter Ashley Erin Jimenez of Odessa, her parents, Jose Antonio Sr. and Melba Munoz, 5 sisters, Diana Dunham and husband Dustin of Round Rock, Christy Lael and husband Arthur of Odessa, Cindy Munoz Morgan and husband Scott of Cedar Park, Rachel Bunch and husband Justin of Midland, Sarah Friel and husband Marcus of Odessa, 3 brothers, Jose Antonio Munoz Jr. of Odessa, Michael Munoz of Odessa, and Stephen Munoz and wife Laura of Odessa, as well as a host of nieces, nephews, and cousins. Rosary will be recited at 9 a.m. March 2nd at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 2nd at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Rose Hill Gardens. Services are covered by Odessa Funeral Home. Gary John Richardson. McKinney. Gary John Richardson was born July 14, 1952, in Odessa to Alvin and Sina Richardson. He passed away February 21st. Gary is preceded in death by his parents, Alva and Sina. He is survived by his sister, Donna Gay Buckaloo, and brother, Hal Richardson. Death notices. David King. David King, 64, of Odessa, died Friday, February 19th. A funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. February 2nd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Reverend Jerome Campbell officiating. Juan Espinosa Licon. Juan Espinosa Licon, 66, died Friday, February 12th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Leroy Parra Lopez. Leroy Parra Lopez, 66, of Odessa, died Tuesday, February 23rd. A memorial service was held Saturday, February 27th at Parkview Church of Christ in Odessa. Arrangements by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jasper Lynn McCowan. Jasper Lynn McCowan, 56, died Monday, February 15th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jesus Elena Munoz. Jesus Elena Munoz, 74, died Wednesday, February 24th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.